Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello, everybody. This is Max Rushton here with your Hawksby and Jacobs weekly podcast. Andy Jacobs is here. Hi, Andy.
Yes, thanks very much, Max.
Thank you.
Yeah, Paul was here last Friday, but you've been sitting in for the first 4 days of the week.
And I have.
It's been a fine effort from you. I'm very, very proud of your efforts this week.
Well, I would imagine
a lot into the show.
I'd imagine the podcast will be exactly 12 hours long. I can't think of one bit you would take out of the 4 days we've done. So if you are on it, if you do jog the length of the podcast, we do apologise. Yeah. Anyway, what's in the podcast?
Well, Martin Kellner. People still want to hear Martin, even though there was a few complaints about the fact that it's a bit out of date by the time you get around to it.
Martin Kellner from 1987.
That's right, yeah. The biscuit game that you brought in that we played with the newsreaders.
That was really good, wasn't it?
Soccerology. Kevin George was very interesting on the subject of young players and also the Raheem Sterling situation, as we call it.
I said he could make a great co-host. I wasn't suggesting we got rid of you halfway through a show, but that's how you took it. That such is the fragile ego of the radio presenter.
That is very true. Paul Watson, the organizer and driving force behind CONIFA, the CONIFA Football World Cup, he came in for a chat pre-tournament. Sheepgate, you'll hear all about that.
It's a great sadness for all of us. I did get a tweet, I didn't read it to you. Someone said that it was not a subject I should be joking about because sentiment is a serious thing, and the loss of your ceramic sheep was important to you, and I should respect you for that.
Well, that's possibly true. We did. There was a moment last night when we just sat down and we both looked at each other and went, "We miss old sheepy." It was quite sad, really.
Oh, please! I can't. I'm sorry. I just can't get behind feeling. I mean, look, I appreciate you had it for a long time, but at the end of the day,
oh, you don't care about anything. You're heartless. If I try and show you pictures of my grandchildren, you just scoff.
No. Just, I'm really pleased you have healthy grandchildren. I don't need to see them.
Okay.
You know, I don't care about. I'll be honest. Don't care.
Good. And I'm a nice. At least you're honest.
I'm a happy nihilist.
Yes.
Nothing matters, but that doesn't mean you should be sad about it.
Yeah. Right. What is a happy nihilist?
You're looking at one.
On a visit to Egypt. Right. Now, can you put in my Isle of Man joke?
Can you put in the silence?
A lot of people like
put in my silence afterwards.
No, don't bother. And also, you brought to the table an ancient version of Don't Ask Me.
Yes. Don't Ask Me from when we last did a show together.
How we did that.
The week commencing April the 23rd, which is actually where Martin Kellner's piece comes from as well. So that's perfect.
So please enjoy.
And now, there's a little story down. If you're on this path, it might lead on to something. I think quite a few people do this in different sports. Mm. People obviously always do it around. Certainly a late great friend of mine used to do this with the guys in his local pub up on Merseyside who were sort of Saints fans. They would just buy tickets for the Challenge Cup final and hope their team got there. If not, they'll just have a day out.
Yeah.
And that's the norm. That's why you get all the different shirts there. It's a bit like a Christmas club fun they used to do. Everybody puts in, gets their tickets, comes down as a good weekend in that London.
Yeah.
And this was a story, apparently. Sam Wallace is out in Kiev for the Telegraph. And he said one of the weirdest things he's seen, some guys walking through the botanical gardens, three guys basically dressed in lederhosen and Bayern Munich shirts.
Oh, they obviously bought tickets.
Yeah. He said they booked trips to Kiev in December. And one of the guys said, we do it every year. And he said, we hope Bayern make it. If they don't, we just go away and make a weekend of it. Yeah. We've been to Milan and Cardiff in recent
years. I knew a Chelsea
fan
who buys a ticket to the plane ticket early to wherever the final is. He's obviously wasting his time.
Well, as you home in on a European final, if you get to the latter stages and you think, do I want to take that chance of being one of like 10,000 tickets that actually go to the fans? Mm. Because they have the general pool of tickets you can buy for the final from UEFA.
Yeah.
And I've often thought, you know, should I take a punt, just get a couple? I could always just sort of give them to someone else and just go for a fun weekend, whoever gets there. So I wonder if you've done that, folks. Have you taken that punt and thought, no, look, we'll just go and have a good time. We'll make the best of it. So if you've done what those Bayern fans did and what people do around the Challenge Cup every year, talksport.com/H&J, text to 81089. I'm taking over the phones.
Do we have to ring you at home?
81089 for me. 81089. TSHANDJ. I'm going to ask Goffey a question later on. Is Barnsley proper Yorkshire?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Not according to Fabian Dilf. He says, I'm Yorkshire. He says, proper Yorkshire. Yorkshire tea bags in the house. He said, I'll be taking them to Russia. And he said, there's a few Yorkies in the squad, but they're posh Yorkies, like Stones, who's from Barnsley.
Posh? I thought Harrogate was posh.
As my son's mate says, I'm Blatford. B-R-A-T-F-O-R-D. I'm Bradford. Proper Yorkshire, says Fabian Dilf. So we'll have to ask Goffey. Whether Barnsley is proper Yorkshire or is it posh Yorkshire? I guess I know what he's going to say.
Yeah, I know what he's going to say too. What a great honour for him doing the bell this morning.
Yeah, brilliant.
It looked like he really enjoyed it. And did you know that the panic of waiting, this is a story in the Sun today, panic of waiting for a takeaway pizza gets your heart racing 25% faster?
Yeah.
I think it's like exercise.
I suppose it is, really. I mean, that's how the Moose gets all of his exercise.
Yeah, exactly.
It's true. It was that's right. Pizza fans, it said, hooked to monitors. And if how long they waited. A four-stage takeaway trauma. And we should have really waited for the Moose for this. Mm. It's like the difference. First, after about 5 minutes, these people would tap their fingers and toes as they're all kind of waiting by that desk in Domino's, because they can see them being cooked. Can't obviously, other pizzas are available and
all right, then.
So that's that. Stage two, anxious. About 10 minutes in, you start getting really anxious and frustrated. Stage three, 40 minutes is a long while for
40
a pizza.
Minutes, you get it for free, don't you?
I don't think they do that anymore. You get visibly irritable. I think the Moose would be swinging at people after 40
so
minutes.
It's become so popular, takeaway food now.
Yeah.
That I was in a restaurant, not a proper restaurant, it's a hamburger place the other night. And it was taking so long to get our meal. And the reason was there was just like a succession of these blokes, delivery blokes, coming in and getting takeaway orders.
It's,
you know, people haven't got time to go out now.
Well, they haven't. They just haven't got time. Well,
I bumped into, I caught up with Ronaldinho, actually.
Did you really?
I said, it's great you're going to marry two women. And he thought that was bigamy.
Ladies
and gentlemen.
Let's take you back to the Finsbury Park Empire circa 1952.
Come on.
When that even Barry Cryer sitting there saying, come on. That's before me.
See it coming though, did you?
No, I didn't know.
There you go.
Hang on. Yeah, go on. Hurry
up. No, it was our millionth podcast download. We don't know the person who did it.
You said podcast.
Podcast. Sorry.
Our millionth podcast downloader. You're really down with the kids, aren't you?
What about you, your phones?
Yeah, that's true.
Telling people to ring you at
81089. Let's move on, Andy. Thank you.
It's a millionth podcast. It's a big thing, that.
All right. What do you want me to do?
Well, celebrate it.
We don't know who it is.
No, but we could have given them something if we knew.
We asked the powers that be what was the name of our millionth customer. We can pass them on a prize.
They said,
we don't know. So,
yeah.
What's the point? Anyway, so but thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Slaven Bilic in line for the China job.
Yes, it's an earner, isn't it, the China job?
He's replacing Marcelo Lippi, Italian, who was on an eye-watering 21 million.
Wow,
that's a lot of money, isn't it, for a team that, you know, isn't really good.
Well, I suppose that's the job, isn't it, to make them good.
Yeah, but, you know.
That's the role.
I suppose
so. We'll see what happens. So just a reminder then, you took a punt, you went anyway, even though your team weren't there. If you did what those German fans have done, the blokes in the Lederhosen, wandering around Kiev today, just took the chance that Bayern Munich may make it, the German guys. TalkSport.com/H&J. Text 81089 or tweet to TSH&J. I got a bit of a Johnny Nash story today.
Oh, yeah.
Shopper Neris Hanna, 23, got back in the wrong Peugeot 207 at a car park in Rotherham and ate the owner's sausage roll.
Really?
Now, it's all right. If you've got a Peugeot 207...
That's a real Johnny Nash. What, the same keys open each car?
Well, no, but the car's open. Say the car's open.
Oh, say it's open.
So, and you sit in the car, and you think, well, this looks like my car, except there's a sausage roll on the seat.
Surely you've got to remember you bought a sausage roll.
Well, exactly. Surely you have. So you think, I'll eat that and see what happens. We go through the looking glass. It's a bit weird, isn't it? It's not a weird story. Why she did that?
Yeah.
Anyway, more on that later.
And even more weird, how did it make a national newspaper?
Roxanne Pallett telling us she had black cherry and her boyfriend had rum and raisin. Yeah. I mean, what a day it's been for news like this. It's been fantastic. What we do without the tabloids.
It's been incredible.
This is what they want.
Listen to the Hawksby and Jacobs Show live every Monday to Friday afternoon from 1. Broadcasting across the UK on DAB Digital Radio. Online at TalkSport.com or via the TalkSport app.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Hawksby and Jacobs on TalkSport. Max in for Paul today and tomorrow. Ali Gotts in on Friday. Paul back on Monday. Before we talk about this incredibly expensive trophy, and he's received some devastating news from the Jacobs household and really has set you back slightly, hasn't it? Explain everything.
Yes, it's a little bit unfortunate. I've got this beautiful thing that I found in a shop called Strangeways in Kings Road about over 40 years ago. It was a life-size sheep. It was a ceramic life-size sheep on a grass base. It was
right, I'm with you.
Fantastic thing. Yeah. And
we've all got one.
And it was a sort of collectible, and I sort of basically had it in the house. And when we moved last year, just found a really nice, perfect place for it in the new flat. But I've just had a photo of it. It's all smashed to smithereens, which is a little bit depressing as it's completely irreplaceable.
Well, so there you go. The magic of radio, it's a bit like...
So have you got a Strangeway sheep on a grass base?
Well, any life-size...
You'd like to sell me.
Any life-size ceramic sheep.
I have found one on eBay, a beautiful large ceramic black-faced ram, 22 centimetres long. That's not quite good, but it hasn't got its own base.
Oh, I see. That's not good enough. You need...
This one came with its own little bit of grass.
Maybe someone else has just a grass plinth just around. Anyway, listen, any messages of support for Andy through this difficult time, the hashtag pray for Andy, it'd be good if we could get that trending through the day. It's very emotional talking to Mrs. Jacobs on the phone a second ago.
He wasn't very happy about it, that's for sure.
And he said, and it worked so well in the room, and that's the thing I couldn't quite... Where does a life-size sheep... How does that work in any room? A ceramic sheep. Anyway, I'm sorry for your loss, Andy. Mm. I wish you well, and
Thank you very much. Fair play to you for
carrying on.
I shall try and get over it.
Hawksby and Jacobs Weekly from TalkSport.
I have a question for you.
Oh, yes.
Because this week I've been doing preparation.
Yes,
for the show.
I've been so impressed.
Oh, that's very kind of you. I don't know if anyone else will have noticed at all. But when you prepare, do you take yourself away to the study, to the Jacobs study? Because when I'm preparing now, the future Mrs. Rushton is just... Because normally we'd just go out for breakfast and go, yeah, I'm doing the afternoon show. I could do nothing all morning. But she's just sitting there watching me read the papers. Mm. So I don't really answer her. And, I wouldn't say we get to rowing.
Obviously I've been doing the show a long time. So,
you have, yes.
And especially, it was fine in the old house because I had a room and then she was being in another room. But in the new place, it's just a big open plan thing.
Oh, dear.
So I have a little office area. Mm. And
is she allowed in it?
Well, she'll be up the other end in the kitchen.
Okay. That's how very stereotypical this is.
Stepping over...
I'd like my breakfast, please.
No, I'm doing my own breakfast. Stepping over bits of cracked sheep. And she wears the headphones, the noise-excluding headphones. And so
does she wear them all the time?
Well, while I'm preparing.
Okay, but not... Why, who are you talking to while you're preparing?
Well, no, while you're reading the paper, you don't want other sounds, do you? Because, it puts you off. I mean, I think.
Oh, I see. So, okay, so she just... But just to be clear, like when you get home...
Get the future Mrs. A pair of Rushtons.
Just to be
clear, you know what I mean.
When you get home, does Mrs. Jacobs keep the noise cancelling headphones on, or does she listen to what you have to say?
No. She talks to me quite a lot.
Okay.
And yes.
And how long is the how was the show conversation? Very short.
What? How did it go?
When does she say how was the show?
Yeah, often she listens. She's a big listener, yeah. Okay. She enjoys the show. She was driving the other day. She listened to most of it.
There
yesterday she was listening to it with her granddaughter.
Okay, 8:10:89, Mrs. Jacobs, if you'd like to text. let us know how you think
she's quite
going.
Worried about the Chelsea situation.
Well, obviously. Is she more worried about that or the sheep?
Well, the Chelsea thing, because she knows it'll impact on her if the club implode.
Oh, okay. Well, the sheep thing seems to impact on her quite directly, given your reaction in the ad breaks yesterday.
Subscribe to the Hawksby and Jacobs weekly podcast today and get all the highlights of the week delivered direct to you every Thursday.
Yeah,
music's back.
I told him.
No, it's okay. Yeah.
No, it's lovely.
It surprised me. Martin, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
What a week of sport on TV it's been.
What a week on sport.
What?
What a week it's been.
What a week of sport. Week of pint of wine.
It's a real week of sport.
Yeah. Fillet of fish.
Indeed. Yeah. I watched the Mo Salah documentary. I know you had the guys in because I was here. I didn't actually hear.
Tony Pastor is the guy behind it. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't actually hear the chat because, right, you know, you can get
too. You know, life's too short, isn't it, Martin?
Yeah, of course it is.
I know you're a busy man.
Indeed.
Yeah.
But I did watch the documentary, which is interesting on Channel 4. I mean, obviously, we're all hugely looking forward to the match tomorrow night. Yeah. I mean, I can't think of a match that I've been looking forward to as much as this for a long, long time. Mm. So we're all looking forward to that.
West Ham, Southampton, when they had to stay out.
Oh, yeah, West Ham, Southampton. Love that.
Go on.
Yeah, no, but it's a real event. And obviously, Channel 4, they had the documentary, but they've not got the event.
No.
But I'd read a lot about Mo Salah. Jonathan Norcroft did a brilliant piece in the Sunday Times. So I knew basically the story and the 4.5-hour journey he had to training every day and all that. They started filming the start of the film was in Nagrig, which is the small village in Egypt. And I said to the missus, without a word of a lie, you can ask her about this. We were sitting there and they sort of trailed they were going to Nagrig, the village where he was born. And I said, I bet they show a film of a goat, an emaciated-looking goat in a dusty field. And that was the first shot.
It's so the money shot.
That's the establishing you would have gone with, is it, really?
It is indeed.
Set you up.
Yeah. They had a lot of interviews with people out there. They said he's more influential. I mean, he's obviously...
What, the goat?
No, the goat's actually not that influential. The goat just got MVP three times last season. More influential... They said, than the president of Egypt, which I'm very much hoping is going to bring peace to the Middle East.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you can forget that, to be honest, as far as I'm concerned. But it was a good show. It was a decent show. They had all good talking heads. I don't know how, it was Goalhanger Productions, how they managed to get Gary Lineker and
tough booking.
Hell of a tough booking, and John Bishop as well. But I thought there was a couple of interesting things about it. I thought it was quite interesting the way they sort of exonerated Chelsea in terms of, everybody says, well, Chelsea had Mo Salah, they had Kevin De Bruyne, you know, why don't they hold on to these people? And Steve McManaman and Steve Gerrard both said that you really can't tell, you know, when these players are kids and they turn up at a place like Chelsea, I mean, you'd know better than me, Andy, but they turn up at a place like Chelsea that's full of huge characters, people like, you know, John Terry and Lampard and the rest of them. It is easy for kids not to show even the potential that they might have.
Yeah, sometimes I agree with you. Sometimes, I mean, in the case of Salah, that's definitely true. I could never have predicted what's happened to him, and I like to think I can judge a player, but I couldn't see. I thought he was a good player. I thought he had skills, but he was trying too hard. But De Bruyne, I could see that. It was madness. Yeah. Absolute madness. Yeah.
Well, certainly in Salah's case, there's exonerated
Chelsea. No, it's fair enough.
Because he did go around it. I thought this was interesting. He went to Basel, as we know, 2010. And one of his mates back in Egypt said it was the food that put him off, the Swiss food, which obviously, as we know, is mostly cheese and Toblerone.
Sort of Swiss roll.
Cheese, Toblerone, Swiss roll.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
But the thing about Toblerone is if you're not used to eating it, it does take the skin off the roof of your mouth.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know how pointy...
Did Salah say that? Did he go into detail?
He didn't actually go into detail about
the Toblerone. Did he mention fondues?
Say fondue, that's just 70s. It's too although it's coming back, isn't it?
Apparently it's back.
It's coming back.
Everything comes back.
Yeah, but he did get player of the season.
It's a good name for a Brazilian player, isn't it? Fondue. Surprised no one's gone with that.
Yeah, it's a good name for a Brazilian. Yeah.
It probably wouldn't have an E on the end, but that's not by the by.
It's by the by.
Yeah. But just carry on Mo Salah.
We dipped into the transfer market and bought fondue. What about that for Sky Sports? You know that for nothing on a player that doesn't exist.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Have you watched anything else other than this Mo Salah?
Yes, I have. Good. I was going to...
Your review is nearly as long as the programme.
Very accusing tone of voice, I felt.
It's 3.11.
3.11.
Yeah. And the great thing is, both shows I watched this week featured the Beatles. Oh. Neither programme was directly...
He's got nothing else, he tells us there, so let's hang this one out for 4 minutes.
The Yeah, no, I had loads to say.
I don't want to cut you short. Have you got anything else you want to say about Mo Salah?
Yes, I have, as it happens, Andy. I really have.
Go back to Mo Salah. I believe it was a good show.
I've noticed this great debate going on Twitter about whether this should be a daily podcast or a weekly podcast.
Yeah.
And people have been adding me into this, saying humorous and satirical things like, I want it to be a daily podcast because I don't want to miss Martin Keller talking about what he's not seen on TV.
Ten days later.
So
we're thinking of putting this out in November.
Well, it'll still be relevant.
It will be.
The joke about Toblerone, I've been using that for years. It lasts. But I did think it was interesting the way when Coutinho left Liverpool, it did leave that, you know, it left the space there for Salah to become the central character, you know, in Liverpool's season, if you like, in Liverpool's narrative. And the statue of the Beatles, I ought to say, is it's in the same way as it's impossible to do a film about a small poverty-stricken village in Egypt without having a shot of an emaciated goat. It's impossible to do a film about Liverpool without showing either the statue of the Beatles or the cavern. We got the statue in this one. But the other thing I watched this week...
Good if they're taking the goat to the cavern.
Well, in FC Cologne, have a goat that wanders, goes around the pitch at the start. We've mentioned this before.
Hereford
has a bull, don't they?
But they do,
FC Cologne, it's called something like Glockenspiel. I can't remember. But they do have
definitely made that up.
I've made that up, but they do have a go to FC Cologne. And I did watch finally, but it is relevant because it's out there on the BBC iPlayer. I finally watched the Water Splash documentary. Which was great.
Wasn't it good?
It was brilliant. And if you can search for it on the iPlayer, you have to search for it. Don't put in Splash because that's a film with Daryl Hannah about mermaids.
Yeah, there's no rugby league in that.
Don Fox, just a fleeting appearance on Splash.
Poor mermaid.
I'd love to hear the Eddie Waring, though, talking us through Splash like as a DVD extra. That would be good, wouldn't
it? That would maybe somebody will do that eventually.
Yeah.
But it was very, very... I'll tell you what I thought was interesting about it for rugby league fans, and that is Eddie Hearn is currently in talks with the rugby league.
Is it Barry or Eddie?
No, it's Eddie, actually.
Is it Eddie Hearn?
Barry may be pulling the strings, but Eddie Hearn has had meetings with the president of the RFL. Now, rugby league is in a parlous state at the moment. I know we always try and build up, and it is a great sport, but there are a number of factors that's led to a drop in rugby league's popularity. Anybody will tell you this. Rugby league is in a bit of a dysfunctional state at the moment, and that's why they're talking with Eddie Hearn. When you look at what he's done, you know, what the Hearn people have done for darts and snooker, you know, it's a logical step. There was and I just thought what we sort of fear, what I fear we might lose is the sort of camaraderie of rugby league, if you like. And that was shown in this Water Splash documentary. The fact that all those players, you know, they put an arm, Gus Risman of, Bev Risman of Leeds, put an arm round Don Fox at the end of it. Don Fox fronted up for interviews with Frank Boff.
It was David Coleman.
Subscribe to the Hawksby and Jacobs weekly podcast today and get all the highlights of the week delivered direct to you every Thursday.
It's also National Biscuit Day. And it's a wonderful thing. And you've, if you weren't listening yesterday because it was a bank holiday and you took the show off, Andy's asked me to do preparation for the show these days. It's a huge disappointment to me. I didn't realise that anything went into this 3 hours of complete guff. Anyway, so your forfeit for this is the Are You Smart Enough to Recognise the Great Biscuits of... it's a great radio feature.
Do you mean the biscuits of Great Britain or the Great Biscuits of Britain?
Here are some biscuits. There are 20 in total. I'll give you four, and you've got to guess these. If you want to play along at home, do get the correct page of the Daily Mirror.
It's not as simple as it seems, because the biscuits are photographed in a bit of a question of sport.
It is mystery biscuit.
Mystery biscuit.
One of them's in a soldering, with a soldering iron.
One of them's playing snooker. Oh, no, he isn't a snooker biscuit.
One of them's stuck in a sound pit. There's some terrible music. Okay, number one.
Number one is a digestive.
Incorrect. Hobnob. Number
hobnob. I meant hobnob.
Well, you can't say that. That's not good enough.
Custard cream.
Correct.
Number three.
Yep.
It could be anything, that. Well, a bit of pink blob. Pink blancmange or something. I don't know what that is.
It's a party ring.
I've never heard of that.
One out of four.
Shortbread, number four.
It's a ginger nut. So there we go. I've got 20 of these.
I don't bother. I'm going to say, these were coming in on Thursday after your preparation had run out.
Hawksby and Jacobs Weekly from Talk Sport.
Andy is laughing because our next guest, Kevin George, used to be a professional footballer, and I've already tried to sign him for Polytechnic Falls.
It's going well.
It is going well.
But Kevin, as Kevin's agent,
yes,
there are other. There's a lot of other interests.
Is that right? So, yes, civil service interested.
That's right.
That's a problem. Kevin, lovely to speak to you. Thanks for coming in. Yep. You've written a book called Psychology. Tell us what psychology is and why you've written the book.
So Psychology is a book about the psycho and emotional elements of football. So from the welfare standpoint, but also for the art of football and the business of football as well. I've never understood why we don't pay attention to players' feelings, because actually it's not only good for their well-being, but also what we want to get out of them on the pitch is so important. I mean, I wrote the book because of my personal experiences from when, I mean, I started off a schoolboy at West Ham, a pro at Charlton, but I worked so hard when I was at Charlton because, not only because you should do, but that was the only thing you have control over, is how much I work. And that would improve my chance of being good on the pitch. But when I got released, Alan Kirby said, you can hang around for 3 months if you want to have a look. And I thought, well, I've been here 3 years. What do you mean? And I was really upset. Mm. I didn't say anything to him, though. I walked out the office and Keith Peacock, the assistant, called me in and he said, are you upset? And I said, yes. He said, why? And I said, because I felt like I deserved a chance and I never got it. And he said, you know what? In all the years I've done this, people say that, but I actually agree with you. So I was proud because I've done myself justice, but I thought, hold on a minute, that's not right. So I've wasted 3 years, and the most important years as well,
yeah,
of my football career. So when I left, I was going on trials, I wasn't even fit. So it's easy, someone could easily say, do you know what, you know, he's got a bad attitude, or, you know, you're not fit. But I was damaged, and I didn't know. So I didn't consciously think, you know what, I'm not going to bother. But unconsciously, it was like, if this is what I got served up, I'm not willing to put in that effort again. Mm. So what happens, I took a step away from football, set up a, I was doing like TV work, so all I knew was football, so I was doing like body doubling for Thierry Henry, Ronaldo, all of that stuff, but it wasn't regular work, and then I set up an education company, doing behaviour therapy, engaging people that, you know, who I grew up around in schools who would misbehave and whatnot, but I always wanted to get back into football and I wasn't sure how, so I set up a blog. Psychology was a blog probably about 6 or 7 years ago, talking about my experiences and anything that came up, almost giving a deeper reason as to why. And it just developed, made notes. And then January 2017, I thought, that's it, I'm doing this book. And I sat down, started interviewing players, from the former players, current players, the next generation of players, and finding out what happened. So, for example, the players that are injured, what is it like? Players who are depressed, why? The intelligent players, like, how do you know to find space? Is it natural? Did a coach teach you this? What's the answers? We talk about football all the time, but we don't dig below the surface. And then going outside of football, I interviewed one of the senior partners at KPMG because I wanted to discuss leadership, but not just in football. So looking at leadership in general and looking at what the pluses are in football, what the pluses outside of football and how they compare. You know, there's a lot around Mourinho and Sir Alex Ferguson, because I've got a few players who played under them. So it's just looking at football as a whole. And for, you know, my editor said to me, who's this book for? And I was really gritting my teeth. I was like, oh, I've got to pick someone. And I'll say for the player. But really, if you're a player, it gives you so much insight, whether you're a pro, whether you want to get in the game. If you're a parent, it's so difficult, because I work with parents and I'm like, you know, my son doesn't say anything to me, because obviously I work in the men's game. They don't say anything to me. And it's so difficult. But actually reading this book, it lets you know so much about what's going on in the game, what your child's going through, and also, actually, you're the only one who's got your child's back, because a lot of coaches are not happy when I say this, but the coaches cannot have the player's best interest at heart, because if they do, it becomes a conflict of interest. Mm-hmm. And they do mean well, and by the way, I'm not saying they don't, they mean well, but sometimes parents get blinded by that, and then their child gets released, and then it is just so damaging for the family. So, I can go on all day, I don't know.
No, it's fascinating.
I wonder about, you mentioned about the players' feelings, and it's interesting with this Raheem Sterling story today about, from my point of view, he can do what he likes. I don't understand why it's a story, but how when we watch football, we tend to disconnect between the fact that they're human beings and they have feelings when we're watching them playing football.
I should say just there, I mean, can you see why it's a story?
No. Okay. It's for me, it's just like, oh my God. For me, Raheem Sterling, he's a footballer, provides a service. He's not a product. He's not owned by anyone. And so this is why, unfortunately, we get players. You see it on social media now. If a player wins, they'll say, glad with the result. We happy to score. And if they lose, you know, we go again next week. They are becoming robots because they can't express anything because they get criticised. His tattoo, he could have 10 tattoos and 10 guns and a grenade. It shouldn't even matter. And even going back to Joe Hart.
But do you accept, I'm playing devil's advocate here, but do you accept that other people would feel, well, hang on a minute, that he is somebody that's looked up to by young people, and this image of a gun, given that, you know, the gun crime, black on black, knife crime, gun crime, this sort of thing, is this a sensible image for him to have? I mean, how do you react to that?
What I would say is that him having that gun on his leg does not change the conditions that a lot of young people are growing up in, that I grew up in, that are killing themselves or selling drugs or whatever. So if people are really upset about the gun crime and the knife crime, then we need to look at the real problems that are happening. And when you look at statistics, a lot of it is from kids getting failed in education, which I've worked in the last 12 years. So if we are going to do that, we need to shift the attention from his leg and look at the source. And these, by the way, this isn't just my opinion from me being there, but these are actually statistically proven. So I think that's what we need to do.
Hmm. And you know, broadening it out, looking at when you talk to these footballers, were they sort of interested because you were talking to them about something that probably no one talks to them about, just about how they feel about
Massively. It's funny because at first I started to reach out to players I knew, and then afterwards, and maybe I'd use the players I knew to get me into contact.
You've been working with clubs, haven't you, in the Premier League?
Yes. Yeah. So, but it was so interesting just by how their body language was. You could just tell it was almost like, oh my God, you're interested in hearing about me. You're not looking to just pull anything. So a lot of the times, if I couldn't even be with them because it's players from different countries, or sorry, living in different countries, I'm transcribing like 2 hours worth of video here, because literally I want their story. So you would flick a chapter in the book and you'll just see them talking about the experience. Anthony Garner talking about his time at Port Vale, being told he's going to Tottenham, not having the option, but actually Liverpool, he said, who else is interested? Liverpool, Coventry, da, 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 but you're going Spurs. And then you hear about why he ended up going Spurs and what his experience was like. But no one's actually asked these questions. So the players were stepping forward in droves.
I suppose the other counter argument, I definitely don't agree with this, but people will say, well, look, they earn a fortune. They earn so much money. You know, do they need all this protection? Do they need all this help? Yeah, I mean, people will say this, won't they?
Yeah, they will. And they've been saying it for years, but we have to ask ourselves a question. What do we value in life? You know, is it money? I mean, for me, no. And if it is, and unfortunately, most people I hear talk about footballers since I was young is, you know, they get paid so much. I think we need to reevaluate in terms of what is important to us in our life. Because if you look at money, I think the average wage in this country, what is it?
26 grand 20, or something?
26 grand. So that means across the world, I saw in 2016, it was 10 grand. So actually, we're all quite well off. So that means at work, we can all get treated a bit rubbish, really, because we get paid well. How are we going to value this? It's about your well-being. I think for footballers, they're getting more and more detached. A lot of young players are being offered contracts, saying, no thanks, don't want it.
I've found from working in football for this long, that I look at it and I think, obviously, when I was 10, I wanted to be a professional footballer. Not that I was good enough, but it was just a dream. And then you sort of think, oh, well, it wouldn't be great if your kids were professional sports people. And I think, I don't think it's a journey to happiness, generally. I don't, or not an easy one. It can be. And yeah, there are lots of benefits. Do you have a conclusion to how people within the game can make, you know, players happier and therefore presumably more successful? Tough question.
Yeah, it is. No, but I'm glad you asked it. And this is the reason why I did the book, because for me, I felt like, put it like this, I think every player I spoke to about their kids, each one have said to me, you know what, I don't want my child to play football. Each one. And now I always say, well, hold on a minute, you're always looking at the negatives though. We've got to look at everything else that it's given us. We were traveling the world, and we get to meet people from different backgrounds. Like the experience is unbelievable. Even in a workspace, as I said, I've worked in education for about 12 years. Ofsted come in, teachers are panicking. But I've been under pressure from being a schoolboy because I don't know if I'm going to get a new contract, you know, or if my manager's going to pick me the next week. So for me, I'm laughing. I'm like, oh, I'm cool. I'm all right. I'm used to working in high intense pressures. So I think in terms of the environment, people need to be brave. And the reason why I say be brave at the moment is we've got things in place now. We've got the psychologist, we've got the welfare officer, we've got the coaches now required to do even more education. But they have to be brave enough. First of all, the therapists need to be able to support players, even when it comes to challenging a coach who's actually doing the wrong things. At the moment, that's not happening. So that's the first thing. The same things we require on the pitch, we require off it. Bravery and courage. Secondly, be brave enough to actually implement what you believe in. We look at, say, Pep Guardiola. He's unbelievable. When he first took over at Barca, I think he lost the first two games. He said to Ronaldinho, who was like a global star, yeah, I'm not having you later, because this is how I want it. You don't fit in my plan. And we're seeing now the benefits, but that wasn't easy. So when we're looking at the system as a whole, we need people that are brave enough to support the players' well-being. If we're going to take it forward in terms of creating a new system, we've got to be brave enough to believe in, this is what I want, this is what I'm going to do, and this is how I'm going
to
do it.
Listen to the Hawksby and Jacobs Show live every Monday to Friday afternoon from 1, broadcasting across the UK on DAB Digital Radio, online at TalkSport.com or via the TalkSport app.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
You join us at a pivotal moment in Andy's Does He Know His Biscuits Challenge. It is National Biscuit Day. It's in the mirror if you want to play along at home. Currently, one out of four.
Play along at
failed,
home.
He failed to recognise.
This would have been great on Blue Peter if you'd taken the job.
Well, I turned down Blue Peter in 2008. It was just too intellectual for me, it was. You failed to get Hobnob Party.
You made that island out of a sort of washing.
No, I had to learn the history of Lego, and I had to squirt someone in the face with a water pistol.
Have you seen the Lego version of the Champions League final?
I have, yes.
Very amusing.
Yeah, I retweeted it as well.
A lot of trouble.
They really did.
Go on, fire away with the biscuits.
Animation. Here we are. So you were 1 out of 4 so far. You only recognised the custard cream. We're on to biscuits 5, 6, 7, and 8.
Okay.
Here we go.
Do you want to help me, Victoria?
No. Come on. This is not Does Victoria Bourne Know Her Biscuits? You're not involved in this. This is a purely Andy Jumper.
Sorry, isn't it? That one, that looks like Peak Freen's number 5.
Number 5.
A bit of shortbread.
Malted milk, incorrect.
Oh, I know this one, number 6. Yes. It's the, what do you call that one?
What do you call it? It's
got, it's like a rum and raisin.
You're allowed to know what it is, but you need to, don't help him.
What is it,
there's
John?
No.
Garibaldi.
Well, I'm not giving you that. It's 1-1. Andy
that was,
won.
That was like, who wants to be a millionaire? You should have gone, Garibaldi.
Andy won. John won. And John's only guessed 1.
7 nice biscuits.
Correct. It's a point for Andy Jacobs, everyone.
And I'd say that's a Maryland cookie, number 8.
Victoria?
Jaffa cake.
Correct. So the scores
are... Victoria.
Andy won. John won. Victoria... 1.
Subscribe to the Hawksby and Jacobs weekly podcast today and get all the highlights of the week delivered direct to you every Thursday.
What have you got, Andy?
Oh, it's that time.
It's that time, yeah. This is time for your, it's for your vignette. I've got loads of here.
Let's go vignette to vignette. You can go first if you want.
No, the favourite headline to come out of the Daily Mirror this morning was from the health section that just said, laxatives aren't just for emergencies. So there you go. Yeah, it's
like
a myth.
Dogs aren't just for Christmas.
No, it's a myth that regularly taking laxatives can damage the bowel. Some of us have naturally sluggish digestive systems. Several over-the-counter laxatives can help speed things along. Anyway, it was just a headline that caught my eye.
It's a good one.
They aren't just for emergencies. They're for all the family, all the time. If you're not sure what to do on a Sunday afternoon, just get some laxatives and away you go.
Here's a feel-good story, though. An Irish setter has donated enough blood to save 180 dogs. 8-year-old Clancy has given 45 pints in Baltimore, USA. Probably not his choice, though, was it, really? So then he was, probably more.
Oh,
obviously, I mean, you've
salute to the owner.
Well, do you want me to follow your good news with some bad news?
Yes.
Okay, go on. This is from the G2
new section. Good news, bad
good news,
news,
bad news. This is bad news for carrots, everybody.
Bad news for carrots. Yes. Is there a carrot shortage?
No. Britain's carrot consumption is booming.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why is that bad news for carrots?
Or perhaps not. Wait for me to finish. Right. Wait. We wait. Let's wait for Raheem to finish that too. That's how you say it. Before we... Just wait. Criminologist Emmeline Taylor has told the Daily Mail that customers may be using self-service checkouts to register carrots as a purchased item when putting more expensive fruit and veg in their shopping bags. She calls these shoppers... swipers, seemingly well-intentioned patrons engaging in routine shoplifting. So, you know, the idea that obviously we were thinking that carrots were booming and that was good news for all of us. Mm. It's actually people might be just trying to get an avocado through on a carrot price. Have you ever done that, Andy?
No.
Are you sure?
Absolutely.
Your face looks guilty as
absolutely.
Hell.
Absolutely. No. Absolutely.
There's someone in my local Waitrose who she's there to stop the shoplifters. It's brilliant when she catches someone.
Really?
Oh, she gets them to take everything out of their bag, dresses them down. It's humiliating. Good for her.
She had them up against the wall sort of thing. And,
oh, you know, absolutely, yeah. Tasers them as the Parmigiano falls out of both their bags for life.
One thing that might be on sale at Waitrose in your local area, because it's that sort of area, is cockroach milk.
Oh, yummy.
Yes, it's true. Most people would be happy never to meet a cockroach, let alone drink its secretions, but claims for a new superfood could put the juice from the insects on cafe menus... everywhere. Gwyneth Paltrow, you won't be surprised, she loves the roaches. And she's already selling Ento milk made of sustainably farmed insects.
How long does one cockroach have to lactate for a pint? I mean...
You need 1,000 insects to produce 100 grams of milk.
Oh, really? I mean, I suppose they don't...
Not as good as cows. I mean, if you had 1,000 cows, you'd exactly. produce a lot more than a gram of milk, wouldn't you, really?
Take that, cockroaches. But, you know, once Trump and Kim Jong-un get together and there's the nuclear holocaust, there'll be only cockroaches left. So then we'll all be... That'll be
do you want the experts view, then?
Oh, yeah, of course I want the experts.
Barbara Stay of the University of Iowa said the only way to milk a cockroach was with filter paper and requires making cultures of it. So you can't do it just like you milk a cow.
I see.
You'd have to be quite dexterous to milk a cockroach.
You would need, yes. I mean, I don't believe...
said something else there.
I'm not an expert, but I don't believe cockroaches have udders. But, you know, I may be wrong.
You are wrong.
Am I?
You're wrong about everything.
You cannot extrapolate from my lack of knowledge of a cockroach's udders so that I know nothing.
Oh, go on, your turn then.
Well, my turn. Our cars are dirtier than kitchen rubbish bins, according to a study. Lots of people listen in their car, don't
sure
they?
Yeah.
This will be terrible news for you if you're currently in a vehicle. Researchers used swabs to test the cleanliness levels of 5 cars and found them teeming with bacteria. The worst areas? Do you want to have a guess, Andy?
My wife would say Chiswick. My cars are right stuff.
Yes, no, well, Chiswick's not on it, but think more inside the car. Like the gear stick, not the worst area for dirty cars.
I see what you mean. Oh, I see. Steering wheel, obviously.
The steering wheel is there, yes.
The stairwell, is it?
I mean, well, you have a very big car.
It's not called that.
What are you...
Stairwell.
You drive. I'll just pop downstairs. I'll for a little nap in your enormous car. Who knew? See, if you do this for 18 years, that's what you get. You get an upper deck. Mrs. Jacobs driving around in a bus.
A double-decker bus.
Driving around town. There you are. You would be the grumpiest. I mean, they're grumpy at the best of times, bus drivers. So you would be a terrible bus driver.
I don't know. I'd be like Stan Butler from On the Buses.
No, you'd be furious with everyone and everything. Gear stick, handbrake, indicator
gear
stalk.
Balagay. Go on.
Steering wheel and the door handles. In 60% of cases, cars were worse than bins, taps and office keyboards. Bill Stimson, who is from Euro Car Parts. Bill Stickers.
Should be prosecuted, Bill Stimson.
No, we shouldn't prosecute Bill Stimson. But do you know what he recommends?
What?
Cleaning.
Well done,
there you go.
Tremendous effort by Bill.
Well, he does say a cleaning routine, but nothing gets past Bill Stimson.
So there we are.
There we go. I should say hello to my wife, who's driving to Luton this
afternoon.
Is she
in a filthy bus?
No, no, her bus is clean. It's mine that's terrible. I bet the Queen got excited yesterday. When,
oh, why?
Well, at Santa Anita Racetrack in America, they had the Corgi National Dog Racing Championships. You know, she's a big fan of the Corgi.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
And they look good. There's a picture of them in the Times. Number four, I think she was on, who seems to be winning.
Yeah, well, yeah, four's going in the right direction. Mm. You know, they don't look quite as expert as greyhounds.
I think it's on the flat. They're no good over the jumps.
Yeah, that is an issue. Beecher's Brook is a real issue for Corgis.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
Hawksby and Jacobs Weekly from TalkSport.
Good afternoon, everybody. You are listening to Hawksby and Jacobs on TalkSport.
Never mind the Khenifa World Cup.
Yeah. Dave in Warwick writes, my missus inherited a life-size cow off her gran. It's in our garden. I hate it. But I haven't got the heart to tell her. Feel free to come and steal it. Dave the Lock says, I bet Andy does have a ceramic basin in the bathroom. Thank you. Dan from Bury asked, was Mrs. Jacobs sheepish when she broke the news?
You have no quality control on these, do you? Just read them out. Well, why don't you edit them before you read them? Why don't you sort of think to yourself, well, that's funny, that one.
I know you're upset.
And that one's not so funny, so I won't read that one out.
I know you're upset about the sheep, Andy. There's no need to take it out on me. What I like is, in the studio, we're joined by Paul Watson, who is the director of CONIFA and the FIFA and the CONIFA Football World Cup. And it's great to have you in the studio. Normally, when someone comes in the break, we sort of talk about the, you know, what they're up to and get a bit of research and a last chance for some good research before we go on air. And Andy just was showing you pictures of the sheep and how it makes them
more sympathetic than you were.
It's really hard coming in this atmosphere, to be totally honest. It's very somber. I was going to say, should I come back tomorrow?
Yeah.
But you made a very accurate point that Andy has been saying this is a life-size sheep. When you see the sheep, it's absolutely tiny. And Andy, for his whole life, has misunderstood the real size of
a lamb then.
Yeah,
it's really small. Yeah, it's a tiny thing. I mean, either that or the other items in his living room are huge. That's the other option.
It's quite a big telly.
Anyway, Paul, you are a director of CONIFA. Can you tell us what it is?
Yeah, sure. It's the Confederation of Independent Football Associations. So we represent nation states, peoples who aren't allowed into FIFA's framework, basically.
What's your role in all of this?
Well, I'm, I suppose, one of the lead organisers of the World Football Cup, as we have to call it, which is taking place in London starting tomorrow. If we called it the World Cup, we'd be sued by a certain organisation.
What's your relationship with FIFA like?
It's fine, actually. They know of us, but strangely, they don't see us as a threat.
Really?
That would be my assessment of it, yes.
But you've had a lot of good publicity about it, you know, our old friends Paddy Power right behind the whole thing. And I know Moose is going down to cover a game. There's a lot of interest in this. And, you know, at a time of the year when there is no football, I mean, I know you've been clever enough to time it like this, you know, between the season and the World Cup starting, but there should be a lot of interest in it.
Yeah, and I think we've tapped into something in that I think people are ready for a slightly different view of football and a more maybe ethical view of it, and also the idea that you should be allowed to play for an identity, not necessarily just to be bound to where you're born, is quite popular. Plus the fact we're a grassroots organisation, we're all volunteers. You can attest to that by the scruffy manner that I present myself everywhere. We aren't big wigs, we're not guys in suits, there are no briefcases full of money.
There was no draw with a lady in a ball gown and, you know, Gary Lineker in a suit.
No.
And, you know, ex-pros with Kinder Egg
That
pots.
Was plan B.
Right.
And like the World Cup trophy you're saying, ours isn't worth 10 million. But it is actually, I think, made by the same designer who are making FIFA's. So I really hope to God they haven't mixed the two up and we end up receiving the £10 million
trophy. It's not a new trophy, is there, this year for the World Cup?
No. I think they re...
Oh, maybe there
they
is,
do,
because
I think
wonder,
so.
Because Brazil, they won it for the fourth... No, they didn't win it last time, so I don't know.
I think the unspoken is it gets lost most times. Yeah. I mean, they've won the World Cup, and I think...
No one really cares.
You'll never beat the Jules Rimet.
Because you're right, there is a, you know, constant talk about the sort of disconnect between, you know, professional football and the fans and all that. And there are some sort of heartwarming stories coming from all the different squads, aren't there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as I say, like for a lot of our teams, just simply being allowed to play for their identity is an immense thing. So some of the sacrifices and the risks they've had to take are huge. You know, a lot of people will know of Tibet, but maybe not so many people would know about Matabeleland, who, you know, they are the people who were victims of a genocide in the 1980s in Zimbabwe. Their team had to play in secret because the secret police would have shut them down. They had to drive 20 hours on a public bus to get to their games, you know, they were basically fundraising till the very last second to get on the flights. Same with the Kabylia team. Their president of their FA was arrested as soon as they qualified for the tournament. So, you know, Tuvalu flying 9,000 miles from a little dot in the Pacific because FIFA's refused to acknowledge them for 25 years, despite the fact there's a thriving football scene there. So there's these sort of amazing, passionate stories throughout our tournament. People who've basically done incredible things to even get to London at all. And we don't want to be too heavy about it, but it really is a sort of exhibition of how much love for the game there is across the world. And this is so detached from the sort of multi-millionaires and the five-star resorts. It's all of us crammed into a sort of student accommodation in North London playing games at non-league stadiums around London.
So that's where the players are staying. Mm. And, I mean, you've got commercial partners. We mentioned Paddy Power there, and you've got others, I see, from the website. So presumably they've helped with the funding? Because, I mean, you know, how have these teams got over here and funded themselves?
The teams fund themselves to come over. We look after them when they're here. As you say, sponsors has been a big problem for us. Paddy Power, people questioned a little bit about having a betting company for an organisation like ours, but they saw it through and they, you know, they were willing to stand by this as a thing. Other sponsors ran a mile. We had four or five significant sponsorship bids, and then we were asked to remove Tibet from the competition, and we refused. And that was where they disappeared. So
that's pressure coming from China, presumably. We don't know.
Or companies that deal with China, you know, don't.
Most companies will have a Chinese interest or want to. And it wasn't only Tibet. Some of our other teams as well, we were asked to remove, but it was mainly Tibet. And obviously, that's not something we'd ever consider. But it shows, I think, quite elegantly how our teams are the underdogs, where they're the little guys. And so getting funding for the little guy is often pretty laborious. And this tournament's been held together by volunteers, by small donations from individuals, just fans who've bought replica shirts. It really is a cobbled together competition, and I think that's kind of the spirit of this event. It's normal people having a tournament.
What about the standard? I mean, how many teams are there? 16. Okay, that's a good number. But I mean, are there clear favourites? Are there teams that are more advanced than other teams?
Yeah, Abkhazia are probably the favourites. They're the holders. They won it in Abkhazia last time on penalties.
Where is Abkhazia?
It's between Georgia and Russia, so it's a disputed state.
No wonders for your geography, this.
Yeah, I wouldn't have been able to identify about 14 of these 16 before
you
I took over the job.
You'd definitely win pointless, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it's true. But I mean, basically, yeah, they'll have some players who've been in the Champions League. There'll be players in this competition who've been at Champions League level. James Riley of Cascadia, he played for LA Galaxy, Seattle Sounders. We've got Marius Stankovicius playing for Padania, who played for Sampdoria and Lazio. But on the other hand, there'll also be a lot of players who are semi-pro and a lot of players who are amateur. So the mix is huge and the quality may be quite different team to team. But at the very top, where you've got Northern Cyprus, maybe Padania, possibly Punjab and Abkhazia. Those teams really are very strong, and I think people don't quite realise how good they are till they see them in action.
Are you worried about mismatches, you know, 16 nils and all that?
They do happen. At our last tournament, there were some thrashings. But the thing is, the spirit of the competition is that people don't tend to run up big scores, and if they do, it's still in quite a nice spirit. I remember at the last tournament when Abkhazia, the hosts, were thrashing Chagos Islands, I think it was 6 or 7 at the time, the crowd started cheering for the Chagos team. Mm. And that just meant a hell of a lot to these people that have been sort of denied their homeland for generations, just to hear the word Chagos and the fans all uniting. So we don't expect there to be any like really horrible thrashings, but there could be some mismatches.
Have you balanced the groups deliberately? I mean,
Yeah, there is a seeding system. We feel there's a group of death. The one with Northern Cyprus in it. Northern Cyprus, Abkhazia, Carpathia, and Tibet. The first three of those are incredibly strong. And Northern Cyprus playing at Enfield Town, where there's a massive Turkish and Northern Cypriot community, they're going to have huge support. Mm. They've got a very strong squad. So we're expecting them to be amongst the favourites, but they could equally go out in the first round if they're not careful.
And how many of these players will be, like you say, absolutely playing for this shirt because they believe in it so much? And how many are, you know, people sort of ringing around going, have you got a granddad from Abkhazia?
To be honest, nobody would do this unless they really believed in it. There's no money in it. A lot of the players had to fund their own flights. You know, everyone who's here is going to really want to be doing this for simply the fact that they feel it's a chance to represent an identity that's denied in mainstream football. So there won't be any phoning it in or any sort of divers, or it's going to be a real sort of grassroots spirit to it, I think.
You reckon no one's going to dive in the whole tournament?
If there's a single dive, we're cancelling the whole thing. Tournament off.
I think you'll
send them to
I
Russia.
Think you'll find there will be.
Hawksby and Jacobs Weekly from Talk Sport.
Like that. Good afternoon, everybody. This is Hawksby and Jacobs on Talk Sport. Jim says, when I was a kid, I had a weird aunt who had a life-sized porcelain collie in the corner of her front room. In many ways, I now see Andy Jacobs as my new weird aunt. And Adam says, pushing back my 3 o'clock meeting, let's do the biscuit quiz. I can't see it or join in, but let's do this.
Well, we need the
this
news
might be, this
team
might be a
back
solo.
In.
It's going to be a solo. Right. Solo. This is biscuits 13 through 16. Andy's currently recommend. He's currently recognised 2 out of 12. So number 13, what have we got there?
Number 13, I'd say, is digestive.
Rich tea, unlucky. 14.
Oh, I was going to say rich tea.
Oh, but you
didn't say it.
And that's how the rules of the biscuit quiz work.
That is one of those. It's half chocolate, half biscuit. What are they called?
What are they called?
What a band they were.
What are they were? I love that song they did. Richard Keys, Anchorman.
Oh, what's that?
What is
chocolate
it?
Digestive.
Correct!
Oh, yes, good.
Your
good
third thinking. Biscuit, well done. 15.
Rich tea, number 15?
No, it's a Choco Leibniz.
Oh, I've never heard of that.
Okay.
You can't bring in foreign
You can't
biscuits.
Bring in these foreign biscuits coming
over here.
Honestly, they come over here. Taking over our tea dunking.
Number 16, I've never seen anything like that in my life.
You've never seen a wagon wheel. There we go. All right, so biscuits.
Is that a wagon wheel? It's cleverly, that is very much like Question of Sport, as we were saying yesterday. You wouldn't recognise that as necessarily as a wagon wheel.
No. Well, looking at
it was playing darts.
Biscuit, it's got biscuit, it's got the marshmallow, it's everything you see
you know
in a wagon wheel.
Okay, it's time to go vignette versus vignette.
Oh, right, okay, who wants to start?
I'll start with this one from India. This is a good story I read this morning. Doctors removed a 6-inch shower head from a man's posterior after the 26-year-old said he slipped and fell in the shower. And you're telling him, oh, yeah, sure.
Well, he fell up. He must have flown up in the air, wasn't he?
Not those.
Wow. Well, there are different types of
shower. Lots of people who work in A&E will tell you, A&Es will tell you that this is, you know, this. People do these sort of things and always say they slipped.
I mean, I'd like to know what type of shower head, because some are much wider than others, aren't they? Really. Do you want mine?
Yes, please.
Here we are. A Chinese family was shocked when the pet dog they had raised for 2 years turned out to be a black bear. The family...
Sorry. That would be a bit of a shock.
Here we go.
Especially as he got bigger.
Well, that's a good point you make there. The family bought what they thought was a Tibetan Mastiff in 2016. Here are some of the telltale signs that it wasn't a dog. They realised their mistake when it wouldn't stop growing and started walking on two legs. Quote, Su Yun...
performing circus tricks.
Su Yun said, the more he grew, the more like a bear he looked. Said Su Yun, who lives near Kunming.
Not Su Yang.
Not Su Yun.
Su Yun.
Su Yun, in Yunnan province. I'm a little scared of bears, she added. Well, so there you are.
There used to be a thing in the China Daily. It was marvellous. It was called China Scene. And it had loads of these stories like that. That was a typical China. And the English newspapers would read them and pick up those little ones. But it's sort of disappeared now. It's really hard to find. Because I think the authorities in China realised that people were sort of using it to take the mickey out of the country, which is a shame because they were fun, interesting. You know, obviously you've got a country with 1 billion people and you're going to get a few sort of interesting stories.
Absolutely right. And so it's your vignette.
Theory.
It's your
turn. Oh, it is, yeah. Well, I could do the thing about the bloke who's squatting in Boris Becker's mansion.
Oh, yes, I've seen him.
Yes, Georg Beres, 44. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, Boris could well do without this because, he's basically, we all know his financial situation, not the best. And it was announced this morning that he's getting divorced for the second time, which is basically the last thing he needs. But anyway, he's got this £13 million home in Mallorca, which belongs to him. But he didn't know Georg that it belonged to Boris, but he's got great big plans for it. He said, he said it could be a place for meetings. We'd like to plant vegetables and offer seminars about renewable energy. I think Boris is thinking, hang on a minute, this is my house.
Well, that's how squatting works. Would he have taken, had it been Ivan Lendl's house, would he have moved in? That's what we're on. If it was Stefan Edberg's, so I'm not moving into a house of Mats Wilander, that's for sure. And this is from Japan. How much would you spend on a melon, Andy?
Probably about don't know how much it is. I'm £3.
Are you in touch? Start asking the Prime Minister,
yeah,
isn't it?
I don't know, exactly.
Andy Jacobs, so out of touch.
So out of touch. He doesn't know the price of a melon.
He's got no clue what a cantaloupe costs the ordinary working family. Anyway, this weekend, a set of two Yabari melons fetched a record-breaking $3.2 million, which is $29,000.
Really? What, for a melon?
For two melons, to be fair, yeah, at an auction in Hokkaido. According to the Mainichi News, these melons went for more than the previous record, which sold for $3 million in 2016. I wanted to make a record-setting bid by all means, said the winning bidder, Shinya Noda, a vegetable packaging company president. There we are. The luxury fruit will be on display until the end of the month. After that, they'll be sliced up and given to Noda's customers. I mean, at the end of the month, they'd probably be...
How do they keep?
Do you know what I mean? If you're spending $29,000, presumably you've got quite a good fridge system. Anyway, late spring is when people in Japan begin buying natsu no gifuto, summer gifts for customers and clients. There you go.
Yes.
$29,000 for a melon.
So. I used to go to school with a bloke called Godfrey Melons.
Did you?
That's got to do with
it's totally irrelevant, but you know, anyone else has any link to the word melon, now's your chance, because Andy's done it. It's good enough for all of us. 8-10-89. That filter's suddenly disappeared, hasn't it?
Now, some photos came in of the Roonies on holiday.
Oh, marvellous.
And... I've got to find it now. Brilliant.
That's okay.
I thought I had the photos. No, I haven't got them now.
Well.
Hold on, I'll be with you in a minute.
Do you want the names of the new referees for the Premier League?
The new referees for the Premier League. I tell you, I do like Chris Kavanagh. I think he's a very, very promising referee.
The two referees, both 35, Simon Hooper and David Coote. There you are.
Right, really?
So, you know, if you work on...
Not the banking family.
No, he's not from Coots. But if you want...
He'd be beyond sort of tempting for a match fixing.
How about this for $4 million? Yeah. I'll give you half a Jinomochi lemon. He'd be like, that's not good enough for me.
Lemon or melon?
Well, the lemons are also pricey. have you got to your Rooney
photos? I found it, yeah. Excellent. No. And Wayne and Colleen Rooney arrived in Barbados lugging 10 huge suitcases last week.
10?
It's true. The last time she went to Barbados, she had 10... And I don't really understand it. The son made a good point here. All they need really is swimming gear, because that's true. When you're in Barbados, and you're staying at, say, Sandy Lane, how much clothes would you need, really? I mean, it's quite posh.
Not a whole lot. It's not going to be... You might need some sort of jumper for the night time. Might get a bit chilly.
But you wouldn't need 10 suitcases. Well, they have got 4 children. They've got Kai, 8, Clay, 5, Kit, 2, and 3-month-old Cass.
You put one child in each suitcase.
They have
4.
And one of the children doesn't have a K. Cass is, I suppose, like Cassius. But Kai, Clay, and Kit all have sort of...
Cass like Tony Cascarino? Because they're the Rooney's love the weekend sports breakfast.
It could be the reason it's very possible. Colleen, 32, showed off her tan on the deck of a catamaran. Mm-hmm. Everton ace Wayne, also 32, thanks very much, you didn't really need to know that, seemed resistant to the golden rays and stayed proudly pale. That's because he obviously doesn't get burned. He doesn't want to do that, does he?
Fair-skinned.
Yes. Colleen also packed in some action, proving a whiz on the water skis. You don't know that. You've just seen a picture of her water skiing. You don't know if she was a whiz on it at all, do you? She might have been rubbish. And she joined Wayne and their two eldest boys on a wild high-speed ride on an inflatable.
Well, how wild.
I know. And it was time for some gentle old-school fun, too, with the couple taking toddler Kit for a paddle with his bucket and spade. Well, like most people do when they take children on holiday. You sort of would tend to do that, wouldn't you? In a poignant holiday with the family. Well, because he might be going to Washington. Meanwhile, Kai showed his sporting side by doing a backflip off the boat.
Well done, Kai. Do you want some good news before we break?
Yeah.
People who wear glasses really are more intelligent.
That's definitely not true.
Genetic researchers have found out, laying rest to a centuries-old cliche. Experts at the University of Edinburgh analysed the genetic data of more than 44,480 people, found the most intelligent were nearly 30% more likely to have to wear glasses than those who scored poorly. Isn't that interesting?
Interesting. It is, but...
I did an eye test for a local radio feature that probably isn't well remembered.
You do a lot of medical stuff for radio stations.
It turned out that I had better than 20/20 vision. You can have better than... I could be a fighter pilot if I don't like flying and I'm not a big fan of war. But those two things aside, and you know I have no filter.
Yeah.
My filter has been reached by Ian Ward, presumably not the former England cricketer.
My car window once, Ian.
Did Ian Ward break your... Did he?
Yes, no, I was bowling to him. Oh, no, I was fielding, that's right. Ian was batting. It was a Bunbury game. In fact, my first ever Bunbury game was in Richmond. And somebody bowled to Ian, and he played a beautiful shot. It was an absolutely fantastic strike. It went for 6, it went for a mile. I thought, what a lovely shot that is. And it went over the tree, and I could hear it crash as it landed. I thought, oh, that doesn't sound too good. And there it was. It was my car that I was selling. I'd already sold it. It was due to be sold the next day.
Did Wardy pay up?
No, he didn't really. Because
what a skinflint.
Well, it wasn't. I didn't ask him to. It wasn't his fault, was it?
It was his fault.
No, it wasn't. He was plying his trade.
Not on the bonnet of your luxury. We found
out breaking news from December 1929.
Only if it's very quick.
Okay. G. Bruton has joined Blackburn from Burnley for £6,500.
Wow, fantastic. Your reaction, please, Burnley fans. 8:10 on the text. Afternoon, everybody. This is Hawksby and Jacobs on TalkSport. Jamie's been in touch, Andy.
Oh, yes.
He's waiting for someone to Photoshop Sergio Ramos holding the sheep in a headlock. he also asks, couldn't he
he's a handyman. I think he's beyond that, isn't he? It's about 100 pieces, at least.
Well, the Marek, anything is possible. That's what my handyman Artur says.
Very true. Artur. Artur?
Anything. He's Polish. Yeah. Ex-first division goalkeeper.
Was he?
Oh, don't mess with him. He says anything is possible.
I bet. Has he played for your Polytechnic?
Oh, yeah. Of course he has.
Was he registered?
Everyone is registered. I don't play ringers.
Listen to the Hawksby and Jacobs show live every Monday to Friday afternoon from 1. Broadcasting across the UK on DAB Digital Radio. Online at TalkSport.com or via the TalkSport app. Don't ask me.
So here we go, Andy. Ask me from the last time I sat in for Paul. Monday the 23rd of May to Thursday the 26th of May.
What are the chances?
So here we go. 5 questions.
Okay, I'll do my best.
Question 1. Who came in to talk about running the marathon in just a bra?
Oh, Bryony Gordon.
Correct. Well done. 1 point. Okay. A rugby player came in to talk to us about meningitis. You spent a long time talking about ticks in Chiswick Park.
Matt Dawson.
Correct.
I'm better on this than I am on the weekly one.
We had a boxer on who kept talking about a great night of music and entertainment until this line, unfortunately, or fortunately, dropped off. Who was it?
Bally Malignaggi.
It was.
Malignaggi.
Yeah, correct.
Is that how you pronounce it?
Yes. So just about.
3 out of 5.
Mocked me because I hadn't heard of a famous British middle distance runner. However, you got his name completely wrong. Who did you misremember?
Oh, famous British middle distance runner. You might have me there. Steve Ovett.
That was David Moorcroft.
Oh, yes. I called him David Moorhouse
for 10 minutes and told me off for not knowing who it was. And finally, and now you're just playing for pride here, Andy.
Oh, well, nearly.
I made you interview me as if I was a footballer from the 70s using some very miserable answers but entirely accurate ones. He gave back in the day. Who was the footballer?
Derek Hales.
Correct.
God,
hey, 4 out of 5. That? Very impressive.
Hawksby and Jacobs Weekly from Talk Sport.
K.R. Nair, chief cricket writer at Golf News out in Dubai, joins us. Pleased to say that K.R. Nair, chief cricket writer at Golf News out in Dubai, joins us. K.R., hello. Thank you for coming on the show. Good morning. How are you? Hello, K.R. We appear to have lost K.R. Nair for just a second. We will bring him back. But just to give you further details on that, England winning the match in the end by 4 wickets. And K.R. rejoins me. And just mentioning Ben Stokes there, big statement saying that England can now become the best ODI team in the world again. Hello, K.R. K.R. Nair, hello.
Yeah.
Hello, mate. We've got you back. Sorry about that, everybody.
Got cut off.
That's fine. We've got you back. Just saying about Ben Stokes and his statement about England being hopefully the best in the world again soon.
Hello.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.